You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Singer-songwriter Kristen Montgomery can trace his origins to singing in the church choir. As a young man, he was even awarded a medal for his voice singing in a rock band in Boston. As with many artists, the journey of life has taught many lessons along the way, and a lot of those show up in his new 16-track CD entitled The Gravel Church. Kristen is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the podcast today.
Hey, thanks.
Thanks for jumping on here with us. Where are we talking to you from? Where are you currently located?
Right now, I'm living in Boston, but working on lovely Cape Cod.
Oh, wow. Cool. All right. And when you say working, there's a lot of people that aren't working in our current situation today. What are you up to?
So I've always been in the construction business. Kind of a jack of all trades, building houses. I'm also a licensed plumber, and Cape Cod is one of these places that seems to have an economy that is never affected by the outside world, so I'm pretty blessed to still be working.
Yeah, for sure. Amen to that. So, you were born in Florida, is that right? Grew up there?
Yeah, I was born in my father was an immigrant from Denmark, and my mom was a blue-blooded American girl whose family goes back to the Pilgrims and the Mayflower.
Wow.
And witches of Salem and all of that. And I was born at West Palm Beach, Florida. And I was there for quite a while. I moved around a lot, though. I've been all over the world. I haven't stayed put very often.
And you got your exposure, if I understand correctly, to music by actually, it seems like a lot of people get this, singing in the church choir?
Yeah, that's where I got exposed to music and capitalism. My reverend was a professional tenor for the Boston Pops.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, he had an amazing voice, and he walked past me during one of the services and during one of the hymns, and he heard me singing next to my grandmother and suggested I sing in the choir, and then my grandmother would pay me $5 for singing a solo.
Oh, cool.
You know, she would bribe me to get the confidence, and then as I got a little bit older, I remember sitting in the standing, you know, during a solo. I think I sang the Lord's Prayer, and I think her name was Nancy. I can't remember her last name, but she went to the same church as me, and I just remember opening my eyes after finishing the hymn and seeing her staring at me, and I went, "This can work." and I realized that, you know, after that, a lot of friends had encouraged me to play in some bands and start singing. And I think I played my first rock concert in Boston when I was 15 or 16 at the Rat in Kenmore Square in Boston.
Okay.
And that started the roller coaster.
And you were, I guess, involved pretty much in music from there on out then, right? Even up to winning an award in Boston?
Yeah, I got nominated for Boston Music Awards and other music awards in different parts of the world. I know recently we were nominated for Best Country Act in the Netherlands, of all places.
Wow, that's cool.
You know, we're getting a significant amount of radio play over in Europe, so that's working out pretty nicely. But we've definitely got the attention of the country scene, and I just did an interview with Nashville Country Magazine, Nashville Country Music Magazine on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
and I have another interview with Limelight Magazine this week. So. It's kind of cool. We have a sound, I think, that crosses over from country, bluegrass, to rock, southern rock. On this album too. I mean, I did a sample of "We Will Rock You" by Queen and incorporated that into a song.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little Eleanor Rigby homage in song "A Life Like This."
So
I mean, we have a lot of fun playing with that stuff.
What brought you? Because I think if I read correctly, initially you were more focused on rock music, but then kind of found yourself more in the country Americana genre. What made you? What drew you into that type of change in the style that you play?
I'd have to reverse the question and say what took me out of it, because I grew up my first concert ever was Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers.
Okay.
My aunt.
Yeah.
My aunt Patricia taking me to that concert, and I was just blown away by the harmonies, I fell in love with country music. I my fondest memories of my grandfather were of him and I watching, you know, CMT and talking about different artists and,
mm-hmm.
you know, what he would, you know, and we would critique the songs and the performances. My Uncle John was a pretty avid banjo player. But, when I was a kid, I kind of got pulled into the rock scene because I had a very towering voice at times,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people compared me to Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin, and I've always been a huge Freddie Mercury fan, and believe it or not, Jeff Tate from Queensryche, these guys with these just powerful voices.
Yeah.
I got dragged into playing in a couple of pretty popular rock bands in Boston, and I would write music for them for the kind of style that we were playing. But it was when I approached people with some of my music that was a little bit more just me, some of my country stuff, that it never seemed to get taken by those guys. So this was my opportunity to kind of, I guess, find my individual sound,
mm-hmm.
and there's definitely influence there from some of the rock that I've played in the past, but when I did this record, I said I'm not gonna think about how it's turning out, where it's gonna go. I'm just gonna do it, and that's how we produced it. Just everything on the record was kind of just happenstance and spur of the moment. It just happened.
And the record you're speaking of is the one titled "The Gravel Church." Is that right?
Yep.
And that's out now.
is out now. I did my distribution through CD Baby, and most of the platforms have it. I'm still waiting on iHeartRadio to accept it, so I can get it at some of the radio stations that use them. We're on Spotify and iTunes, and you can purchase the record on Bandcamp.com. It's amazing how it's everywhere. Over in Denmark, they're able to pick it up over there where mm-hmm. my dad's family's. And it's, believe it or not, doing pretty well over there. I'm pretty psyched.
That's cool.
I love traveling there. It's my second home. So,
what was the inspiration for this record?
Oh gosh, well, it's somewhat embarrassing. I've always been a tradesman. I've always been a pretty blue collar guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a father for the better part of, you know, I have six kids.
Okay.
I have four, with a mother who, I battled quite a bit with as far as, being able to see the kids. And here in the Commonwealth in Massachusetts, it's very difficult for dads to stay in the picture.
Right.
And so difficult that it put me in prison for 6 months.
Wow.
I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I asked the judge to lower my child support at one point after I almost died. And when he said no, I made the mistake of telling him how I felt about it. and I was thrown in prison for 6 months, and the gravel church was a 25-by-25 foot area that I was the only place I was allowed to see the sunlight.
Wow.
And that's where I did the majority of my thinking and my praying, and also it was the first place that I've ever written a song on paper without an instrument in front of me.
Huh.
I wrote a song called "Razor Wire Heart" for my kids, just to let them know that I'm still here and I'm not giving up.
Yeah, I would imagine an experience like that gives you plenty of things to write about once you get a chance to sit down and put them on paper and work them out.
It sure did. I had an incident where I was in a situation where I had a conflict with a man who was quite a bit younger than me, and I ended up in solitary confinement for a week for getting into fisticuffs with this gentleman.
Mm.
And, it was all over the fact that I snored.
Oh, no.
But, you know, I walked out of there in a way somewhat proud, thinking to myself, you know, I still got it.
Yeah.
You know, I can still run with the pack. So
was music, were you involved with music in any sort of significant way prior to spending time in jail?
I was. I got remarried to my childhood sweetheart who, we both lived in a fishing village, and I used to check her out down on the docks when we were kids, and, she got divorced around the same time as me. And when we got married, we talked about it, and she said, listen, you've been so close so many times to being able to just do this for a living.
Yeah.
And it's your passion, it's your calling. You know, whatever resources we have to expend, let's go for it. We were planning on getting into the studio prior to that, just to do a 5-song EP. And then that turned into a 16-song album, which was kind of the, those 16 songs represent a year in my life that are... And it's meant to be listened to as an album.
Okay.
Uh, I know that this is a day and age where, you know, the attention span has dropped and the interest level as far as, like, what the songs are really about anymore sometimes seems unimportant. But, I mean, this is an album that, you know, described everything that happened to me in a certain point in my life. And so it was very cleansing, and it was very... it was like a deep exhale after it was finished.
Yeah, so. I'm sure. So when you play out with this record and this music, do you get to play it that way? Do you get to play it conceptually as it was written, the way you want people to understand it?
We do. We definitely, my guitar player Joe and I, and bass player Tim, have a really cool chemistry, and the Winterkill Band is kind of an evolving thing that people come in and out of. I had a good friend, Keith Schleicher, that was bass player of a band, the Heave Ho in Boston. This guy Jeff Armstrong came in and sat in on six songs. He's in a band called the Delta Generators. They're starting to do really well. They're a bluegrass, Americana band.
Yeah. Cool.
I would recommend them to everybody. They're really good. They just got on the soundtrack of a couple of cool television shows.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, but they're people come in and we, you know, these six songs, they're definitely not played live the way they are on the album. I mean, everybody takes liberties. Everybody has a chance to kind of go off on a tangent.
Mm-hmm.
My very good friend Kayla Dutton was kind enough to donate some time and sing on my record. She sang on A Life Like This, and at the end of Take You Home, which is a song that I wrote about dating after getting divorced. If you listen to the end of that song, I mean, I call it an epic journey. I mean, it just meanders and blueses out at the end, and she's got this amazing Paula Cole-like voice, and she's really easy on the eyes, too. She's a beautiful girl, and, inside and out, I mean, just a lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
When she sings, I mean, you can kind of see all the guys in the band just melt. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, cool.
we have such a cool live chemistry. So,
what's the... I'm assuming that this has not been out too long yet. What do you have a plan going forward for getting to tour with the record? You mentioned in the beginning of our conversation that you've got a full-time job that you do. What does it look like to be able to get out on the road with this and support the record?
It's looking pretty good. I do, even prior to this record, I've done a lot of solo acoustic stuff.
Okay.
And whether it's me by myself doing my Colin Hay storytelling concerts, or with a band, it's definitely a priority. I mean, we want to get out there, we want to play. But I think the great thing about everything right now is for a band like us who are, we don't have a lot of money behind us. I mean, everything that we've done up to this point has been on our own. We don't have an extraordinary amount of funds or anything like that, but it's been great. Like, you know, for your publicist to call you up and say, you know, I drank two bottles of wine the other night and just sent your stuff everywhere.
Uh-huh.
usually they don't have the time to really put into this stuff. I mean, the world, it's just such a busy place now, and everybody's this has slowed the pace down a little bit to where people like us who we're not a major market yet, we have the opportunity to kind of get a word in.
Sure, so, sure, yeah, yeah.
So I'm hoping that by the time that everybody's allowed to go back out and play and enjoy life, that we will have had the opportunity to tell everybody about our album and tell everybody about our, you know, what our live shows are about.
Sure, yeah.
And to have people want to come out and do that.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. So the record again is The Gravel Church, and remind us of your website, how people can get in touch with you.
Yes, you can find us on all the music platforms. My personal website is www.amwab.com, and all of our links to social media are there, our links to all of our stuff that we've done with the media, and links to all of our music, YouTube, and all that's there, so you can see some of the live stuff that I've done. I've already got enough material for another record up on YouTube.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And my producer Joe is like, dude, I can't keep up with you, but like, the next album's going to be just as full of hits as the last one.
Wow. You can already tell. Yeah, that's so cool. Good. Well, thanks, Kristen. I appreciate you sharing your story and letting us learn more about your music, and we certainly wish you well with it.
Thanks.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.